I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News Mayoral candidate Hannah Fitzharding. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations to you on deciding to run for mayor. How does it feel?
Oh, it's a lovely process. I have to say, you know, I'd love the outcome to be a positive one, but at the end of it, I know I can look back and say this has been a really nice process to talk to people about the future, about what they would love about Freo, about what they could see being better about Freo. I've loved it every minute.
Now, the two questions I wanted put to you and the other candidates who are running is, tell us a bit about your vision and what made you decide you needed to run. You can take them in any order you like. Why did you decide to run?
And it was a process of deciding. You know, I'm someone who's often been a bit of a behind-the-scenes person, an advisor, or, you know, someone who's given advice. And it, for me, it was really thinking, wow, do I want to put myself forward as being this person who might do this role? Good question. Why me? Why now? I think one of the things that is peculiar about the role of mayor is at the end of the day, you can get elected mayor and you're still one vote amongst 13 votes.
That's something to be remembered, isn't it?
It is. So you have to be someone who can engage and lead a group of people to do something. So you can't come out with a big wish list and say, I will do this and I will do that and I will do this if I'm elected mayor, because if you don't have the support of at least six of those people, it's not going to happen. So as someone who works in leadership development, that for me is a really interesting proposition where you say, okay, have I got the skills, have I got the attributes, have I got the experience to work with a group of people to make decisions for the collective? And I hope I do. You know, I'd really enjoy understanding, engaging with other people, understanding their vision and working out how we can deliver it together. So that was sort of part one. Part two was, in Freo, a lot of things that we need to do need the state and federal government to come on board to help us succeed. And for me, having had a background in working in state government, and you know, 20 years ago now, a lot of people who I know have gone on into state government, into senior roles to do various things. Now, I have no interest in that. But can I use those relationships to try and do things on behalf of Freo? I think I can, and I feel like it would be wasted not to do that. The other bit for me, you know, is that real opportunity around engaging with the community. I mean, I'm a professional facilitator, a coach. That process of engagement, understanding, you know, working through difficult issues and coming to some kind of shared collective resolution is something I absolutely love. And I feel like that's, you know, doing this job actually wouldn't be that different to my current job in terms of using those skills to bring people together.
Well, that then brings one to Fremantle, put Fremantle front and centre. We Fremantle people, all of us, love the place. People who love a thing often have different ways of loving it and have different aspirations for it as well. Do you have a particular vision for Fremantle in the period if you're elected mayor?
Yeah, I mean, and perhaps I could start with that point as kind of almost a philosophical point. You're absolutely right about Freo. People have, you know, strong and diverse and interesting views about how we can do things. But we're highly involved, highly informed, highly passionate and committed to Freo. So I think as almost a cultural thing, one thing that council can do is actually get behind the community, understand what the community's aspirations are. Sometimes it's up to council just to get out of the way. And sometimes it's up to council to seed whatever ideas are out there in the community, get those ideas kind of understand them and then actually support them. So it might be through grants, it might be through community development, actually helping people in the community do things. So philosophically, I like this idea of how does council shift from something who does and provides all these different things to a facilitator of other people doing stuff or having ideas or pushing things along that they want to see happen. What would I like to see? So I am obviously going around talking to a lot of people in the community at the moment. I've been out there door knocking with, you know, for months and months now, and having sort of cup of tea events, sitting down and understanding what people are thinking and feeling. The things that feel like priorities to me, there's some stuff around back to basics. And when I say that, I mean, cleanliness of the streets. So particularly in the CBD, people, you know, sort of joke, but really needs good pressure clean. You know, it just needs a bit of a lift to match, particularly the investment that's going on around the CBD. There's something like $1.8 billion worth of investment that's in the pipeline or under development, catalysed by the Wallylup Civic Centre project. So there's a huge amount of new stuff going in, which is great. There's, you know, read weekend papers, have a write-up constantly of the latest new place to go to in Frio, and people are loving that. But we really need to make sure our streets kind of step up and look how they should look to support that. Amenities an issue. So one of the things that we're noticing is Frio is a really desirable place to live. You know, people really want to live here. And if you're in Hilton or Beaconsfield, a lot of subdivision going on, a lot of people moving into the rear blocks. And our population is growing, and particularly younger families. So sporting clubs and parks, even the park benches. You might have seen, I was having a look the other day at the South Beach playground that's held together by gaffer tape, which is kind of indicative of some of the priorities recently. So certainly we want to make it safe.
But it'd be pretty strong thing, gaffer tape, isn't it?
Well, look, you know, it's doing a good job, but I think really that's our council officers making do with you know, not enough investment in those areas to really make sure our assets are up to scratch. Trees is coming up a lot. People really want to protect trees from subdivision, so making sure that that doesn't result in loss of canopy cover in the suburbs. They want better street plantings and our natural assets to be looked after. And there's all these fantastic Friends of groups who look after, you know, Clontarf Hill or all of these areas. We need to make sure they've got the budgets and the access to plants to do what they do voluntarily really well. So those are the kind of things I'm hearing. What, you know, the challenges with all of that is that says, hey, we've got to spend a bit more money both on services and on some of the infrastructure. And where do we get that money from? And that's the perennial Frio challenge.
And that's the perennial Frio challenge. And is there a prospective answer, a potential answer to it?
Well, I've put a few things on the agenda that I think are potential answers. I mean, I guess the big one is always looking at how do we increase our rate base? So how do we get more people living in the city, particularly in the CBD? There's still a way to go on that, and you know, more investments hopefully to come. The other things that I've brought up are the issue of Notre Dame. So Notre Dame, as you know, is exempt from paying rent rates, unlike other universities who are exempt also from paying rates under the Local Government Act. Notre Dame don't have a campus that's you know, sort of you could draw a border around and say, here we are at Murdoch University and we've got, you know, everything within here is our control and we look after our own roads and rates and rubbish and all that stuff. In Frio, it's very different with Notre Dame. They're integrated into our city. We had a memorandum of understanding with them that's now expired. That had them paying $75,000 a year, which hasn't been indexed to CPI since, you know, the agreement was first made way back when, 30 years. And really was just for spending money around their campus. I don't think that's appropriate now. We lose something like $750,000 a year in rates because of Notre Dame buying up buildings that were previously ratepayers.
Mm.
So I think we need to start that conversation and shift the dynamics with Notre Dame. I noticed University of Tasmania has recently moved down from Sandy Bay into Hobart. And are doing up a whole lot of old heritage buildings, which is fantastic, and spreading their campus across Hobart and voluntarily paying rates to the city of
right?
Hobart.
Oh, yeah. Well, there is an interesting conversation to be had.
Yeah.
Well, that, on the figure you just gave, potentially could raise the city's budget on the good side by $750,000.
Certainly it would bring the cat bus back to regular schedule.
Well, yes. Well, that might become a major election issue, I suppose, the cat bus frequency.
Mm.
What other sort of revenue opportunities are there for Fremantle and making the budget work?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to look through what we do, I think, and say, are there things here that don't really fit with a local government context? So, I mean, one that I've highlighted particularly is the Roundhouse, the state's oldest public building. And it's sitting with City of Frio as one of our sort of assets to maintain. It's getting to be a very old building and maintenance will be increasingly expensive. And while we've just put $500,000 into maintenance, I don't think we can keep doing that year in, year out. So I really think that that asset should move back to the state government where it really belongs. It also has a bit of an opportunity tied up in that around the connection between the Fremantle Prison, the Roundhouse, and Wodgemut Rottnest Island, you know, and those three stories connecting up. And I see 2029 as being this, the bicentenary as being this great opportunity to connect up those, you know, stories and histories and the truth telling around that through those assets. I think it also, you know, you look at Fremantle Prison, which is a World Heritage asset, so a pretty important thing, but a lot of heritage grants go in the direction of Fremantle Prison. It's harder to get money for the Roundhouse, and I think if there was maybe a bit more of coordination between those similar era pieces of heritage, that would be a good outcome.
Now, in Fremantle, the former mayor, Dr. Brad Pettit, has been elected to the upper house. Mm-hmm. He's a member of the Legislative Council, and apart from anything else, that obviously freed up the position of mm-hmm. mayor. Brad, to be fair, had his detractors and he had his great supporters. If you were mayor, would there be any great change from the past to the future?
I think it's fair to say I'm very much my own person. I mean, I think I said earlier, I'm a team player, so I'm not someone who, if a decision doesn't go my way, will go out and write a huge screed on Facebook saying how terrible everyone is or, you know, how I thought it should be different, because that's, to me, that's not how you get stuff done. And I respect the governance structure that we work in. You know, I'm a graduate of the Australian Institute of Company Directors course, and I think it's very clear that, you know, in order to have good governance, you need to respect the institution in which you're working. But I'm very much my own person. I think it's I would have a different approach. I think I certainly my facilitative approach, I think that is something that's quite unique to me. My values are very much around achievement, getting stuff done. You know, I really like tangible things that you can see happen on the ground, but also the kind of good governance stuff around working out what is it that really local government needs to do, what's in our bailiwick.
Now, as we draw towards the end of this interview, I'm keen to discover from you, the candidates, what two or three big issues, whatever they might be, development versus conservation, finance and making the budget balanced, or the port moving south, whatever it might be, royalties for the regions, namely the outer suburbs of Fremantle. what do you see in the 4 years ahead might be the hot button issues around Fremantle that keep us writing interesting articles on the Fremantle Shipping News?
I'm sure there will be no shortage. The one around, I think, the future jobs in Fremantle and what does happen as the port moves south, I mean, that's not a decision that we get to make, but we very much need to be a party to the conversations about what happens next. And it's not just a spatial discussion about, you know, a whole bunch of land. It's very much an economic discussion around jobs and how is it that we structure anything that happens in that space so that it's, you know, the last thing we want is a southern western suburb out on the North Quay there. So I think we really want to think about what are the kind of jobs that people are going to be doing in 10, 15, 20, 30 years time, and orientate ourselves towards facilitating that, and that really becoming, you know, Fremantle becoming an employment hub again. Because while the container port does employ, you know, a number of people, and those jobs will be moved, and we've also lost jobs out of things like the Fremantle Hospital downgrade, we really need to think about what is it that we do well here. And there's all these seeds of opportunity with the film industry, film production side of things, particularly technology industries. You know, we've got some really interesting small tech industries happening across Frio. The marine industries, things like the super yachts, fitting them out, and happens down in Henderson, but giving them a home port. So there's some massive opportunities in that, and I'm really, really excited about what we might be able to do there. If I can have one other issue.
Yes.
We need to break through, and this is where I really would like to try and use those kind of negotiation and facilitative skills, we need to break through this issue with the vacant shops. I mean, I read a statistic the other day that there are 30 people with great retail or hospitality offerings trying to get places to lease in Fremantle.
Amazing.
And you walk down the street and everyone says, look at all the vacant shops. And we need to get the landlords, the real estate agents, the people who are trying to lease, we need to get them in the same room and work through this issue, because it's such an opportunity lost. And, you know, for us to have every time something new opens on the strip, we think, oh, wow, you know, this is kind of exciting. But unfortunately, at the same time, often a shop becomes vacant. So we need to break through this somehow.
Well, Hannah, thank you very much for meeting with the Shipping News this morning. Starting to outline your campaign. Mm-hmm. I'm sure listeners will be looking out to see what you and the other candidates have to say. Mm-hmm. And there'll be a number of opportunities, we all know, for the candidates, both the mayoral and those sitting for the council or seats, to speak in precincts and more generally. And the Shipping News is one of the sponsors of the big mayoral debate on the 30th of September, along with Notre Dame, Chamber of Commerce, Fremantle Network and Oxfam, which we look forward to seeing you and the other candidates at. So good luck with everything ahead.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.